Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to go ahead and call the House Transportation Committee to order at 2:02 in the p.m. Today is Tuesday, April 15th of 2021. Present with us today are Representative Drummond, Vice Chair Representative Hannon, and myself, Chair Hopkins. Assisting us today is our Recording Secretary, Lori Rowland, and our trusty LIO moderator, Doug Bridges. Thank you very much both for being here today to help us out. I'd like to remind those who are participating remotely to please mute your microphones when you're not actively speaking so that we can get a clear recording of these proceedings for posterity. For those listening at home, information on today's hearing can be found by visiting akleg.gov and entering House Bill 60 into the search bar, HB 160. Are there any questions from anybody on the committee before we get started? Nope. All right. So today we'll hear House Bill 160 by the House Rules Committee by request of the governor. It is the intent of the chair to hear the bill and set it aside for further consideration and public comment for possibly, I believe we're going to be taking it up on the 27th. Let's see. With us today via Microsoft Teams are representatives from the administration spanning the Departments of Transportation and the Department of Law. I believe that Mike Lessman, legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, will be kicking off today's overview with a discussion of the legislation. We'll then also have available from the administration for questions Charlie Deininger, I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, Chief Contracts Officer for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Mike Lund, Northern Region Construction Engineer for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and Richard Welsh, Assistant Attorney General from the Department of Law. Mr. Lessman, hello. There you are on the screen. If you could please put yourself on the record and proceed with your discussion about the legislation, it would be much appreciated. And we don't have any presentation today. It'll just be Mr. Lessman discussing it. So we'll go ahead and interrupt you as questions arise. If they do, Mr. Lessman, just raise your hand and get my attention. Thank you very much. Mr. Lessman, put yourself on the record and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Mike Lessman, legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Are you hearing me well?
Yes, sir, loud and clear.
Fantastic. Thank you, Chair Hopkins. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to introduce House Bill 160. This legislative proposal is before you today because the department wants to be responsive to the needs of its contracting community. This legislation exclusive purpose is to grant the department authority to write regulations around a process which already exists between the department and its contractors. House Bill 160 amends Alaska Statute 3630, the state's procurement code, codifying the department's current use of construction manager general contractor, that's CMGC, construction contracting method. The CMGC contracting method provides for a two-phase contract in which the same contractor can provide construction-related services during both the pre-construction and construction phases of a project. Although this procurement method is not a specific option under current state procurement law, the department has been successfully using CMGC contracting method under the authority of the innovative procurements language found in AS 3630-308. This contracting method has been used for public facilities projects, federal aid highway projects, bridge projects, and new vessel construction projects in Alaska for approximately the past 15 years. It's been used even longer in the lower 48.
Mr. Lessman, I'm going to interrupt you real fast and just recognize the arrival of Representative McKay, Representative Spondholz, and Representative Kronk at right about 2:06. Thank you much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. CMGC is a recognized process in the Federal Highway Administration regulations. You'll find it in other states' DOT regulations, and it certainly is a commonly accepted practice in the construction industry. DOT's experience here in Alaska has been that CMG contracts can decrease contractor change orders, can decrease administrative delays, and leverage our department's resources, thus allowing the department and its contractors to more quickly improve Alaska's transportation infrastructure. Mr. Chair, once the CMG contracting method is hopefully adopted into state statute, the department will collaborate with the Associated General Contractors of Alaska and other stakeholders to adopt regulations and guidance materials which will further refine and standardize this innovative contracting method for application here in Alaska. We look forward to providing our contracting community with clear and consistent sideboards that could improve the CMG process. Mr. Chair, that really concludes our introduction. As you mentioned, I have some really good help to assist me with the committee's questions today. Mr. Deininger is DOT and PF's chief contracts officer. Mr. Mike Lund is one of our construction engineers from Northern Region. He's got quite a bit of experience with CMGC construction management. And we're also joined, as you said, by AAG Rick Welsh. Rick has worked with DOT on several CMG contracts, and he was part of the Department of Law's team that drafted this legislative proposal. I'm happy to provide you and the committee with a sectional walkthrough of the bill if you'd prefer that, or we're also happy to move on to your questions at this time. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Lessman. Just to recognize Representative McCabe joined us at 2:07. At this point, why don't we go ahead and go through the sectional real quick so we can all get a decent grasp of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Lessman.
Excellent. All right, Mr. Chairman, Section 1 of the bill adds CMGC, the methodology of CMGC, to AS 3630-200, subparagraph C. Moving on to Section 2, that section adds a new subsection C to AS 3630-250, which actually would allow the department to exclude price criteria when awarding a pre-construction services contract under the CMGC contracting methodology. Section 3 adds a new section, section 0.309 to AS 3630. This is really the operative section, operative provision of this bill. It identifies the CMGC method as requiring a two-phase contract, one contract for pre-construction services and another for construction services. It also stipulates that the department awards the construction services contract only if the parties can reach an agreed price for construction services for a specific project and a specific project scope and schedule. If the parties cannot reach an agreed price, the department may contract with another contractor for construction of the project using any other contracting method under the current procurement code. Section 4 simply adds a definition of pre-construction services to AS 3630-990, adds the new subparagraph 28. Section 5, getting really at the heart of the contracting community's needs and the real reason the administration brings this proposal forward to you, this is where the legislature would authorize the department to adopt regulations that would further implement this act. And in the final section of the bill, there is an immediate effective date provided for regulations that might be adopted.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lessman. I believe Representative Hannon had a question.
Thank you, Chairman Hopkins. Mr. Lessman, I thought it seemed familiar, and you mentioned that we have done this for upwards of 15 years, and my recollection is this was the process used to build the SLAM building, the State Library and Archives and Museum building here in Juneau. So how have we been able to do it if it wasn't allowed under statute, and what's the impetus to change the statute if we've been able to do that?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, you are absolutely correct. Those projects you mentioned and a few others have been built here in Alaska or in the process of being built in Alaska under the CMGC contracting method. We are able, with the Department of Law's help and some administrative work between our chief contracts officer and Department of Law, we are able to use this under the language in Title 3630308. It's a section of the procurement law described as innovative procurements. We do have, as I mentioned, AAG Welsh online that has been very involved in this, as well as our contracting officer. But that is the short answer to that part of the question, Representative Hannon. The other piece is why we want to do this now is because we don't have the sideboard set up for this process. We have heard from the contracting community that perhaps from South Coast region to Northern region, Central region in the middle, we have a little bit different process of administering these contracts. We know that the contracting community wants clear criteria. They especially want to understand how and why it was a specific contractor was selected over one or the other. So this is really about setting up some regulations to improve a process that already exists.
Okay. Can I have a follow-up? And I think it's to the AG involved, whose name slipped by me because Mr. Lessman, I know, and I did.
Walsh.
Mr. Walsh, could you help describe for me and presume I know zero about procurement law, having no idea that we had something called innovative procurement, and just legally tell, because we've been doing this, and is it on a case by case, project by project basis? That law had to work a process to say it's innovative in this circumstance. So help narrow me from the engineering side and the contracting side to what we need, why we need to make this change now for something that we've been doing, and the change in statute. Is it just because after 15 years it's no longer innovative? It's standard that we should be doing for all major projects?
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Hopkins and committee members. For the record, my name is Richard Welsh from the Department of Law, and through the chair, Representative Hannon. I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head. So there is provision under the currently under the code for innovative procurements, and through that process, the Department of Transportation will submit to the Department of Law an innovative procurement plan, which will outline the procurement method, the innovative method they propose to use, how they intend to implement it, why it's appropriate in this circumstance. So it's an ad hoc process. Every time the department wants to use it, they have to submit this plan, and it undergoes review. And you, as you also alluded to, we've been doing this for some 15 years. So at some point, it's really no longer innovative. This CMGC process has been progressively used throughout the country more and more. FHWA has, Federal Highway Administration has recognized it here in the last few years through regulation. The GSA, the federal government's counterpart to our public facilities, has adopted this approach within the last few years. So, yes, it does away sort of this ad hoc approach we've been doing over the past few years. As Mr. Lessman has suggested, it'll bring uniformity with regulations. We'll have a more uniform approach in contracting, in soliciting contractors. We've heard that some contractors have expressed concern about, you know, different evaluation standards at different times. So the hope here is, well, not the hope. The intent is to bring some uniformity to this, to recognize the fact that it's really an established construction method, a procurement method these days. And if that's the case, let's adopt statutes and regulation and move forward to further, you know, implement this process more formally.
One follow-up?
Follow-up.
Now, we've been talking about contractors and talking and thinking about buildings, but it's DOT, and what comes to mind also is a vessel, say a boat that we decided to build in state and not go out for competitive bid to a nationwide search and build it as shipyard. When we did that, was that an innovative method, deciding not to use our standard bid process to go nationwide for a boat building? Does this change enhance our ability to control design and construction of a vessel, even if it wasn't within Alaska, or does that have nothing to do with these regs and this law?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'll do my best to try to answer that question. There's a few questions in there. So first of all, yeah, I am generally familiar with the Alaska Class Ferry Project, and as you all may be aware, under the Procurement Code 363850, new vessel construction is exempt from the Procurement Code. So that's a means by which the state implemented CMGC, but if I'm also recalling correctly, the DOT did also go submit an innovative procurement plan to the department, and I'm sure it did. I do recall that. So it was a mix of those two things. I mean, first of all, DOT didn't have to get approval through the innovative process because it new vessel construction is exempt, but it followed that process nevertheless. I think that was part of your question. A second part is, does adoption or proposed adoption of statute and regulation enhance the state's ability to direct where the contract is awarded? Did I mistake that?
Nope, that's a good summation.
There's a two-part answer. If federal funds are used, we can't use local preferences. If state funds are used, that's a different matter. So if, as in the case of the Alaska Class Ferries, ACFs, state funds were used on that and the current administration selected the shipyard in Ketchikan to construct that vessel.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wells.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Representative McKay has a question.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, Mr. Welsh and others, I'm going to try to be concise. First of all, I believe that normal procurement practice would be to obtain three sealed competitive bids, and you would evaluate the bids, and typically the low bidder would be awarded the work, and that would be for construction services. And then it looks like once you have a winner of the construction services contract, do you then go to that winning company and say, okay, now we want to contract you for pre-construction services? And then you award that piece of a contract. What I'm worried about here, I guess if I can put it into words, is you award a contract to a company for pre-construction services, and then if you like what they do, you just go ahead and award the construction services contract to that same company without bidding. I might have this wrong. I hope I do. But if it's anything like that, then it maybe gives the appearance that we're not doing competitive bidding like we should, and we're basically given sole source work, and that might give the appearance of favoritism and might violate state procurement codes. I know that's a really long question. I apologize. Maybe you can kind of clarify that for the benefit of the group.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, this is Richard Welsh, Department of Law. I will take a first stab at it, and maybe Mr. Dininger will follow up and do cleanup for me if I've mucked it up. But so, To quickly summarize, as the bill is teed up right now, the department would put out, following this process that's proposed, the department would put out a request for proposal for any entity that's interested in offering a proposal on this CMGC project. And so there would be an evaluation initially of their for the award of the pre-construction services contract. So there's a number of criteria that you would adopt. In fact, the regulations no doubt would address what those criteria would be. But basically you're looking for that, of course, it depends on what your evaluation criteria, but generally you're looking for a contractor that's well suited to your project, that has demonstrated expertise, that the panel, the evaluation committee, concludes that is the best candidate for this project. So, yes, once if they score highest, that entity gets the pre-construction services, works with the department during the pre-construction phase on all those pre-construction components delegated to them. They work in a collaborative manner. At the end of that and throughout the process, there is their estimates being shared between the parties and refined as the project develops. And at the conclusion of that project or process, the pre-construction phase, as that phase nears conclusion, the two parties, the contractor and the department, see if they can't reach an agreed price, guaranteed maximum price, a price at which the contractor will perform the construction services within the agreed scope. And so it is different from the traditional invitation to bid. Low bidder gets the construction contract. When the successful contractor gets awarded the pre-construction services, they earn the right to negotiate with the department to arrive at a construction services contract. So I might not have squarely addressed all of your issues, but it does change the landscape somewhat, and that's what this bill is required to do, to sort of take it out of that norm that you sketched out for us. If I've missed something, I will turn the mic over to Mr. Deininger.
Follow up?
Well, that's very clear, Mr. Welsh. Thank you. And I think I had it right. If my company comes in and gives you a really nice pre-construction services bid, low cost, high quality, and I get that award, then I'm in the driver's seat for the main contract, and there's no more bidding. And that's okay, but are we sure we want to do that?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, I think I put a little less emphasis than you on the driver's seat. This is a collaborative process where we've engaged with this contractor during the pre-construction phase because we value the different skills, abilities that they bring to the project. And as I mentioned, as the pre-construction phase draws to a close, you engage in negotiations with these folks. There's no guarantee they're going to get the contract. In fact, the statute, I believe, says that. The regulations will undoubtedly say that, and the contracts I've worked on say that the contractor has to negotiate in good faith. If they don't, I mean, they don't have us by the short hairs. We can simply conclude that we're not going to be able to negotiate an agreed price, and we can put it out to bid to the public.
Okay. Representative McCabe?
So just for clarification, the first guy that you were talking to, Mr. Welsh, was McKay,
and I'm
McCabe, just for clarification, because I think it's important. So maybe it would be helpful for us all to understand the difference between RFP, design build, and CMGC contracting. And also, I think that that you didn't mention anything about the there's some sort of a third-party intervention in the price fairness, some sort of an estimator in there in the contract negotiation that sort of intervenes to make sure that the price is actually I forget what he's called, some sort of auditor or something, to make sure that we're not getting priced out of what's fair, I guess. And also, I think we didn't really talk about it, or you didn't talk about it, but mentioned the fact that the lowest bidder for a contract is not always the best way to go, just because of the cost overruns and that sort of stuff. So maybe you could kind of touch on all those points. You know, typically we've seen the lowest bidder come in, and then there's huge amounts of cost overruns for relatively shoddy work. And I think that's what, from my understanding, that's what this, I talked to some friends in the industry, and that's what this is designed to avoid. So maybe you could touch on all those for us and help us understand.
To the chair, yes, first of all, my apologies for misidentifying you folks. So to pick up on your last comment first, so yes, there's what they call an independent cost estimator, who is you go out and through a separate contract, engage somebody who's got experience in cost estimating in this industry, not necessarily cost estimating, but has a good handle on the prices of the various materials, equipment, labor within that particular industry. And they work with the department, and they are also the entity that generally, I don't want to say looks over the shoulder, but engages with the contract on line item by line item or material by material. Okay, for instance, what's your cost on this contractor? And the contractor will provide open book method, their invoices, the subcontractors' bid numbers, will provide that information to the independent cost estimator, and who maintains his or her own inventory of costs for those same items. So it keeps
the contractor honest, if you will. They're sharing all their raw data, all their estimates. I mean, there's no hidden costs here. Everything's on the table. And I don't want to go too far afield, but yes, you're correct there, that there's that element. There is an element baked in to avoid the contractor who hides costs, and then after the contract's awarded, there's all these extra costs that you didn't anticipate. Very quickly, you mentioned a couple of different procurement or project delivery methods. Design build is the manner in which the department, for those of us who were around then, acquired the fast vehicle ferries. The owner basically solicits a contractor or a joint venture, what have you, to generally design and construct the whatever the project is for the owner, the department. Gives them performance specifications. We have a vessel that needs to carry these many passengers, has to weather this sort of sea conditions, has to travel this speed. And then the contractor figures out what the design parameters are and gives a price and designs the project, constructs the project, and delivers it to the owner for the agreed price. The conventional design bid build, which you'll sometimes hear invitation to bid, ITB, that's sort of the conventional method that DOT and, I mean, public construction in general has followed for countless years, and that is where the owner, the department, engages the services, either internal or external, with a architect, engineer, what have you. They work on a design, bring it pretty much to functional completion, and they put it out on the, they advertise it, and here's our design, here's our contract. Low bidder gets the project. And you're right, Representative. I mean, sometimes low bidder is not always the best option, but that's the way things have traditionally been done. Was there something else I've missed, sir?
So follow up. Thank you. And through the chair, that's exactly what I was trying to get at, I think, is on the one hand, you have the RFP process, which is the low bidder process, where the DOT designs the project and they go out to the low bidder and it runs into cost overruns and all that sort of stuff, and it's all sort of hidden. On the other hand, you have the design build, which is what we did, as the Representative Hannon said, with the fast ferries. We just give them the specifications. We don't really know what they're going to come up with. They come up with something, they build it, and then we get saddled with the fast ferries. And this CMGC is sort of right in the middle. Would that be a fair statement?
Through the chair, yes, I believe that's a fair statement, Representative.
Yeah, so I don't know. From what I studied on this pretty hard last night and called a few folks, and I think I'm a fan. I don't know. So.
Yes, certainly, Representative McCabe. Representative Sponholz, did you have a question?
Answered.
All right, thank you very much. So I guess I have a couple questions just as I'm learning about the bill and working on it as well. Oh, before I go forward, we have received a number of letters of support from various construction and contractor firms, and those have been uploaded on BASIS if your staff wants to get you those. I think this might have just been answered, but the CMGC process, if this legislation goes through, would that become the only method of bidding available, or would there still be the options for design build and other methods of bidding and designing?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mike Lessman, legislative liaison for DOT. I'm gonna grab that one if I can, partly because I apologize, we didn't do a very good job of explaining that this is just one tool in our toolbox, so to speak. It absolutely is not the only procurement method we use currently and intend to use in the future. It's just one of.
Thank you, Mr. Lessman. And so what would be the process for deciding which method of procurement goes forward?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's time to bring in our construction engineer in Northern Region, Mr. Mike Lund, if you so please.
Certainly. Mr. Lund, please put yourself on the record and go ahead and answer the question, and I'd be happy to restate it if you need.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mike Lund, Northern Region Construction Engineer for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And, yes, would you mind repeating the question?
Not at all, certainly. So As Mr. Lesman said, there would be multiple different types of procurement and bidding processes and design processes if this goes forward. Can you talk about what the process would be to decide which style of procurement the department moves forward with?
Excellent. Thank you. That is a fantastic question, Mr. Chairman. So right now, of course, we have design, bid, build, or low bid as an option right now in statute and codified with other regulations. And we also have design, build. In CMGC, we have been using it through the innovative procurement method when we have been able to identify areas for innovation, areas where we can reduce risk, areas where, you know, to put it shortly, we need a contractor's help to figure out how to solve this problem, to deliver this project to Alaskans. There have been several areas where we have, you know, been able to generate efficiencies and capitalize on innovations and contractor input. And there is sort of a laundry list of potential avenues where a contractor's input can help and reduce overall risk. So there are a number of factors that are included in that, it sort of depends. It depends on whether or not there's a heavy risk, heavy need for innovation. Maybe there's a need for contractors' input on staging and phasing. Maybe there are long lead materials type issues. But in a sense, it is if it looks and feels like a project that we're going to have a lot of trouble delivering without a contractor's input, or we're going to be leveraging a lot of department risk by putting this out to low bid, that's a great opportunity to go down that evaluation process of whether or not we should look at alternative contracting methods like CMGC.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. I appreciate that explanation. And as a follow-up for Mr. Welsh at Department of Law, it sounds like you'll be looking at the project, seeing if there's complications in it, questions where you could find those efficiencies. Will that process be put into the regulations that this legislation would allow to be written, or would it still be something of a subjective decision about which process you move forward with for procurement?
Richard Welsh again for the record, Chair Hopkins. The intent would be to establish criteria that would enable the department to select appropriate projects that are amenable to the CMGC process, either through regulations or a CMGC manual, some more formalized method than this ad hoc, you know, somebody decides and then submits an innovative procurement plan to the Department of Law and we review that plan. So the intent would be to bring some uniformity to that, the department's selection process.
Thank you very much, Mr. Welsh. Representative Sponholz had a question.
Yeah, I think this is a question for Mr. Lund. You said that there are times when you could potentially manage risk or reduce risk to the department by using the CMGC process. Could you give us an example or two?
Sure. Again, for the record, Mike Lund, Transportation Public Facilities. Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, is that correct? I'm sorry.
Sponholz, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Yeah, so the question of how to manage risk in general. When the department puts together a project with the design, bid, build, or low bid, we own the entire contract and all the documents and all the assumptions that went into that preparation. And when we put that out to bid, if there's something wrong with that set of plans, we own it, right? If there's a change of conditions or we got it wrong, and frankly, we're pretty good at what we do. We don't always get it wrong, but sometimes things can't be perfect, specifically when you're dealing with subsurface conditions and other issues that exist on several of our construction projects. But when we get those things wrong, we own them. And when you're sitting down with a contractor during pre-construction services, and a contractor and the department have the ability to sit together at the same table, and a contractor says, hey, I see this risk, and I'm able to put a price to that if this risk materializes, then that puts everything on the table so that the department and all of its resources with the contractor and all of its perspectives can say, okay, how do we manage this risk? how do we mitigate this risk? Is there a way that we can reduce that either through alternative contracting methods, or not alternative contracting, but alternative construction methods? Is there a different material that we would like to incorporate or evaluate for incorporating? Is there a different method that we can use to go about constructing this in terms of phasing and staging? And are there other alternatives or innovations that a contractor would be able to bring to the table? And I'd say we were able to have that discussion with the independent cost estimator that was mentioned earlier. Sorry, the lights are turning off in my garage. Anyways,
we were able
to have that discussion with all of those players prior to committing to costs, right, and moving forward with construction. So I apologize for the long-winded nature of my response, but that is one avenue or a couple avenues where you go to reduce risk and ultimately reduce schedule impacts and cost impacts as well.
Thank you.
Representative Hannon had a question.
Mr. Lund, could you share with us some of the places where we've used CMGC and they've been really successful from DOTPUF's perspective? It's gone well, we've saved money, it went faster, et cetera.
Yes, I can. Now, I will share that my experience, through the chair, representative, thank you for the question. My experience is predominantly in the highways side of things, and there are some slight differences with facilities or with ferries in terms of the methods and the parts and pieces, if you will, of delivering a project through CMGC. But on the highway side of things, we've been dealing with and utilizing CMGC for about 9 years. I think one of the first projects was the bridge replacement outside of Denali National Park at Riley Creek, I think milepost 237 on the park's highway. On that project, I believe we were able to shave 8 months off of the overall project delivery schedule. We were able to evaluate and execute some permitting options that we would have never been able to push through between the department and the National Park Service until we had that contractor at the table with us talking about impacts and areas that they might be using for staging. And then with regards to managing traffic impacts as well. So I would say that that project is an overall success, as well as the rest of the CMGC projects that we have put out on the highways side of things with bridge replacements. In Kivalina, we're just finishing up a CMGC project that has some huge logistics issues, material site issues, staging and phasing issues for the school site access road. Now, that project was delivered through CMGC. We were able to stage that work in various work packages so that we could maximize on schedule and opportunities to mow both equipment and resources and materials out while we were also continuing the development and execution of the rest of the project. So I would say that I have not had a bad experience with CMGC thus far.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lund, I'm a Fairbanks native myself. So has this been used on the University Avenue project as well?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is. It has, and it is right now.
Excellent. That was certainly a complicated project. And so it was one of the larger projects also in Fairbanks. But on that note, would there be any bid size requirements that would need to be achieved, so like a cost or a number of months impacted, in order to decide to utilize the CMGC process? Big project, small project?
An excellent question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. At this point, I think because we are still, we have used CMGC, like Mr. Welch mentioned, in an ad hoc project by project, on a project by project basis. And so as we develop regulations, or if we're able to develop regulations and various manuals, and the department is able to build on its knowledge and experiences with CMGC, and we're able to do that with the contracting community as well, there may or may not be a need to have a threshold for, say, the minimum size of projects. I don't know that necessarily can be answered. I would hesitate to put a threshold on that where we might in the future miss an opportunity because we've inadvertently or arbitrarily applied a threshold when maybe there were some advantages that could be applied to a smaller project that would go towards meeting the needs of solving issues and delivering projects to people who need them.
Good answer. Thank you, Mr. Lund. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of comments from contractors around the state when the regulations are open for public comment. Representative Drummond has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if the question is for Mr. Lund, but I'm noticing at the top of page 2 of the bill, it says that the DOT may exclude price as an evaluation factor when awarding a CMGC contract. That concerns me somewhat, in that it sounds like it's open for consideration once the contract has been signed, rather than as an advance consideration.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. I'm not sure who wants to take that question, but somebody can jump on it.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I'll take a first stab at that, and then I'm going to ask or maybe throw this back to Mr. Welsh to see if he would like to comment further. The issue of including price in the proposal is also related to when the department might ask for a CMGC contractor to come to the table. If the department has a project and we are able to design the majority of the project, but the major issue that we can't seem to get past without a contractor's involvement in this hypothetical project that I'm imagining is staging and phasing, right? How do we get this project built in reality with all of the traffic and other features that we might have to design it around and with, right? In that instance, the department's able to develop the majority of the project, and so maybe price is a relevant factor for actual construction price to be included in the proposal, right? That's where it may be something that we would want to include. But then there are other projects where, let's say, the risks are much earlier in the project that have to be managed. And let's say some of those are environmental and permitting risks where we're not entirely sure how to solve this problem or thread this needle in terms of delivering this project or satisfying this need to the public. And to ask a contractor for a price before we even know what we all want, other than the fact that we all have a problem and we share and own that problem together, asking for a price early on in that stage may not actually mean much when it comes to actual construction. And that is one of the reasons why there are cost and competitive controls that are in place as part of the process that would be a part of regulations as well, where things like an independent cost estimator who is bidding the job in a similar setting, going through cost and pricing information, production rates, getting into subcontractor quotes, and all the parts and pieces and nuts and bolts, that is why that is a part of the process itself to preserve that sense of competition and ensure that the department and contractor are both pricing these projects fairly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. Representative Sponholz had a question.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of share the concern that has been expressed by a couple of the members that if you say that price may not be a factor, then, you know, that potentially, you know, the state gets leveraged along the way. And I'm trying to find the specific, there's been discussion about the independent cost estimator. Is that just sort of a standard practice that's been done, or is that already described here in the bill clearly?
Through the chair, Representative, thank you for the question. If you, I think on of the bill, on line 22, and it starts with parentheses C, mm-hmm. says that the contractor providing pre-construction services and the Department of Transportation do not agree on price for providing construction services. That's not pre-construction services. That's let's do the actual work, right? Then the department may seek alternative contractor using a process authorized under this chapter, which would be any of the other contracting methods. I'm sorry, I didn't know if there was a follow-on question.
Yes, there is. There's a follow-up question, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess my question is the, you know, the requirement that there be an independent cost estimator referenced in another section of statute that I'm not seeing referenced? I don't see it sort of I see the reference to the discussion about coming to an agreed upon price, but I don't see anything specifically referencing the independent cost estimator be involved. And I just think there's been a lot of well-documented cases in the state of Alaska where we maybe have not made the best use of state resources. We're in pretty tight fiscal times right now. I want to make sure that we're, like, you know, doing our due diligence as a state. I'm sure y'all are extremely professional. I have a lot of respect for your experience, but I want to understand exactly where that the reference to independent cost estimator is referenced in procurement code, and if not, maybe we need to add that here.
Mr. Lund, it looks like Mr. Walsh has his hand up, and he might know that answer. So, Mr. Walsh, why don't you take a stab at it?
Thank you, Chairman. And through the chair, I believe it was Representative Drummond who posed the initial question.
It was Representative Sponholz, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I recall somebody asking a question about the Section 2 of the bill, which addresses
excluding price.
Notwithstanding subsection A of the section, DOT may exclude price as an evaluation factor when awarding a construction manager contract under 309. So that is specifically addressed. That's in reference to Section AS 3632.50 is award of request for a contracts on a request for proposal, and subsection A of the 2.250 states, among other things, that price is an evaluation factor. In an RFP, price has to be, under current law, an evaluation factor. So what this proposed section 2 would do is it would alter that by saying that DOT has the ability to eliminate price as an evaluation factor when considering award of a CMGC contract. And first of all, it's discretionary, it's not mandatory, but what it's trying to avoid is a proposer coming in and lowballing on the pre-construction services contract. And because is a weighted evaluation, so price may be under a conventional RFP worth, 30% of the score, and another factor is 10%, et cetera, until you reach 100% on the evaluation quotient. So what that specific section 2 is proposing to do is giving the department the ability to not require price as an evaluation factor in the award of the CMGC contract to avoid the lowball situation. It's not mandatory, it's discretionary, it's a precautionary measure. And it really has nothing to do with the independent cost estimator.
Thank you. That was clear to me in reading this. I think my question was that there was sort of this idea that we have an independent cost estimator that's available to us if we run into some disagreement under the CMGC process in negotiating sort of the next phase of a contract, and that's been sort of described as a bit of a fail-safe to protect us from being, leveraged potentially in a negotiation. But I don't see, is that referenced elsewhere? Anywhere else in the procurement law that I'm missing, or is that just sort of like an internal process that's been used by the department but isn't referenced either in statute already?
Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, it's not referenced in this bill. It's not independent cost estimator is not referenced in the procurement code. It's a critical element of the CMGC process, and the intent of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Department of Law, when and if we're given authorization to work on regulations, would be to flesh out those elements of the CMGC process in the regulations or in a CMGC manual. But I want to underscore the fact that an independent cost estimator is an integral part of the whole CMGC process.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. I just don't see it spelled out in the statute that's being proposed here, and that seems to me maybe a little bit of an omission that should potentially be remedied.
Mr. Welsh, would it be your intent to put that into the regulations that would be allowed to be written and put out for public comment?
Chair Hopkins, the answer to that is I intend to work with the department to draft regulations as they
wish, but and quite frankly, this process is not going to work without an ICE or independent cost estimator. It's just that component is so central to, well, is a central element of this entire CMGC process. And I honestly can't see the department is not going to use the CMGC process without invoking the independent cost estimator. I'm confident.
Thank you. Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chair Hopkins. And it's more of a comment than anything. Everything I read about the CMGC process last night, that independent cost estimator, and I had just forgot the name of it, is part of it. He's the guy that tells the DOT how much it should cost, and then they go together and they negotiate, and maybe somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, but without him, the DOT would have no idea how much it was going to cost. So he is a fail-safe, but he's also integral to the whole process, and then they negotiate a price from what he says it's going to be and what the contractor wants, and somehow they come together. And I thought it was a pretty elegant process when I read about it. So,
thank you. Mr. Welsh, you still have a question? I don't know if that's a new hand raised on the screen.
Yes.
Or comment, yes, I guess, yeah.
My response, I think the representative has articulated that point. And I've been cautioned not to go too far in the weeds, but you have to understand during the pre-construction services phase, there's going to be intervals at 30% of functional design, 60%, 95%, some selected intervals where the parties are going to have formalized meetings where they're going to, and I'll oversimplify it, but the contractor is going to be sitting across from the independent cost estimator. And again, I'm just simplifying this, but the independent cost estimator is going to say, okay, line item X, what's your number on X? Well, I've got Y value, and the ICE is going to say, okay, well, I've got a different value. How did you arrive at that number? And they're going to prove it up with invoicing objective evidence. So I'm sure anyone who knows the process is cringing at this explanation, but the point I'm trying to make is that the ICE is involved throughout the process. There's a progression of estimate of design of cost estimates, and you go as the process progresses, the numbers should become clearer and more firm, and the two sides are comparing numbers across the table, and if there's any fundamental problem, there's going to be a stop at some point. I don't want to commit the department to anything, but the intent is that you're going in a progressive manner, an iterative manner, where you're going to have better estimates as the design becomes more fleshed out, so that there's these steps along the way where you're going to be comparing numbers, reconciling numbers between the ICE and the contractor. So there's no big, you know, surprise at the end of the pre-construction phase and say, oh my God, you've got a number that's three times larger than our number. You're going to know those deviations as the pre-construction phase is moving along.
Thank you, Mr. Welsh. Are there any other questions for the committee at this time? So thank you for that explanation. And we're going to go ahead and set the bill aside for today with no further questions. And we'll bring it back up for public comment right now. The plan is for to bring it back for public testimony on Tuesday the 27th, although that might change. So we'll keep the public record and the committee abreast of what those that schedule will look like. Any other questions for what we're looking at today or for next week? The schedule should be out in a couple of hours. There's no further business to come before the committee at this time. We're going to go ahead and adjourn at 2:56 p.m. Thank you to all DOT and Department of Law for being here today.